UCLA. Okay. All right, I'll start over again. This is
out on a tight schedule, right? So
yeah, UCF BOT and UCF UFF bargaining teams. It is January 5th, 2022, and we are bargaining. And I guess we are all looking at the minutes from the last meeting to see if they need our approval.
All right, if there's any objections.
I think, yeah, I think, well, I don't see any issues here. I think we, right.
Okay, if there's, I'll include them for you, Talat, if you want. So yeah. If there's any objections later, let me know. Okay.
Anybody else from the team? Do you see anything missing?
I didn't see anything.
Okay, great. So.
All right, Sherry.
Let's see. I think, well, we've got John there. Kevin is there. Okay, so not everyone is here, but most people are here. Yeah, so I think that's great. We got the minutes done. So the agenda for today, I think, well, I did exchange it with only the team. Why don't we go ahead with you guys first? You've got several articles to present. So let's do that. And then we have, what I did is I made a list of all articles now. So there are 12 in all, if we include 32.
Okay.
So let's see how many we can get done. Hopefully we can get all of them done. That's, you know.
All right. Well, we did make a change to Article 23. Charlie, you might want to put that up.
Okay. Give me a second. Share screen.
Okay. So the major change that we made in Article 23 is we had to adjust the dates, as I think you knew we would have to do if we didn't settle by before we went on break. So the new dates are the effective date of the raise would be April 15th, and that would be distributed on pay date May 6th. And the effective date for the, the one-time payment would be the same, the 15th, and the implementation date would be the 6th, and it would be at this point a one-time payment of $1,400. I think that is the only change from our last proposal, so I just wanted to make you aware of that. The effective date of April 15th, we can agree to that date until 5 p.m. on February 16th. That'll be our last. We've got four more bargaining sessions to get this contract put to bed in order to get money to your faculty by the end of the academic year.
So, Sherry, so this, the payment that we're talking about, that would be the one, as if the increase had been in effect in October, and then it is divided equally among all.
Yes.
All in the bargaining unit, right? So
it is basically $100 per person per pay period.
I see. And that's basically assuming that everybody who makes more than 48.5 got
3.5%. Yes.
And the others got 3.5.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Correct.
And so that's the calculation that you had shown. So yes. No bonus has been attached to that, right? I mean, in other words, it's just that. Okay.
That's it for 23.
Okay.
So let's see, we can move on to, I guess.
23, and then you have 20 and 17.
20 and 17, okay. 20, I think we sent you a possible TA version, and you had one thing that you said you were didn't agree with. So tell me what it is that you don't.
So
want
basically, what the only thing that where we differ is that you know, there is that I'll go to the line right here, and that is the 20.11b, Mm-hmm. Which is, and this is something that, and I would have, if Claudia is here, I will have her speak to it. So basically, we wanted this to be 20.11b to be deleted.
Okay. Well, thank you. We'll come back to the proposal on this then our next session.
Yeah. So that's just the because I think the main and just to clarify it, the point is that we don't want a waiver which basically says that the university has the right to refuse a grievance. So if it can be said in any other way, because I think we all agree that everything should be filed according to what we are saying here, right? But the point is that if you can just unilaterally say, no, we are not going to accept it, that doesn't make sense, because one may be, there may be little issues which can be dealt with. You know, I know that one of the
I understand your arguments a lot.
Okay.
And I'll tell you though, if we take out that language, which has been in this contract since the Blue Book days, I think what's going to happen is the logical, the end result of that is going to be that if we get things that are filed that are, and argue clearly either untimely or in violation of some other provision of the contract, which we sometimes see. And I recognize that some of the problems that we have with grievances are things that are filed by the grievance themselves that don't even go through the UFF, which is a whole different problem, but that we'll be doing a lot of calls with arbitrators to determine if these things are, if they are actually timely or if they are actually in violation of another provision of the contract. So it's sort of six, one half a dozen of the other, but you know, I understand your argument and we'll come back next week with something or next bargaining session with something.
I'm just going to go ahead and formally withdraw that TA proposal so that we can go back to the bargaining proposal. Okay.
That'd be great. So Sherry, what I would, since you understand where we're coming from, and I also understand where you're coming from, if you can come up with a language, you know, or maybe a window. So for example, you know, if something is misfiled, you know, or there, you know,
Article 32, I want to jump to that really quickly because that's new. We haven't put it on the table yet. And I'm not going to go through every item in here. It is largely status quo, but there is some, we've made some changes to things that we think just make it more readable or clearer. But there's one provision that we absolutely have to have. And that is line 48. And the reason I'm saying that we have to have that is that Heidi Watt, who was the person at UCF who is in charge of SACS, and we have a 5-year SACS review thing coming up this year, said that this language, we have to modify this language for SACS purposes. But other than that, you know, we don't really have a huge investment in the other changes. I mean, we like them, otherwise we wouldn't have put them in there, but read it, see how if you're comfortable with these definitions. If you're not, let us know. We can work out something. This is not usually a big problem article, but you know, just put it out there for your consideration. Most of it, as I said, is status quo, but there are a few changes.
So just to be clear, we don't think that this is substantive that they're asking for, but it does have to align with SACS. So this is the critical one. The others were open. If you don't feel like they're descriptive in some way or they're lacking, we're interested to hear what you have to say to make it more clear. It's a good starting point on this, but this is a must have, just so that you're clear. Okay.
Hey, Sherry, could you provide us the documentation from SACS that says that the change needs to be done?
I'll ask Heidi to do that, certainly.
Thank you.
Actually, there should be a link to SACS too, right, that we can look at.
I don't know if it's quite that simple as providing a link to a particular place, but it's the way that we've provided the definition.
We'll put Heidi in touch with you.
All right.
Rather than us try to mediate.
Right.
Unmute.
Okay, that'd be good.
All right, and then I will let Chuck go through Article 17 with you.
Oopsie.
All right, thank you. Charlie, could you pull that one up for us, please?
Yeah, one sec.
And Sherry, when is our next meeting?
19th.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, thank you, Charlie. And Talat, we appreciate you sending us an annotated version of 17. It was helpful to see that there are places that we have essentially come to agreement. And what we're posting right now is a version of 17 where we've implemented all the changes that we've agreed on. So there's a few things that we still want to talk about. And what I'm going to propose, I'm going to ask Charlie to drive for us here with this article, but I'm going to be jumping around all throughout the article with some things that I'd like to point out to you. I think some of these may be fairly simple and we can resolve them. Others may be a little bit less simple, but let's see how we go. Charlie, could you advance to line 60, please? Yes, thank you. Yeah, Talat, you had asked if this addition of duty here was a clarification, and yes, it's absolutely intended to be a clarification. Our answer is yes. Some things are scheduled by time. Some things are duties that may not be at the same time every time somebody performs them. So it covers everything. It is absolutely meant to be a clarification.
Okay, because it didn't, you know, I mean, the content of this item has not changed.
Correct.
Right. Okay. So I think in that case, we don't have any problem with it.
All right. That's fantastic. Thank you. Okay. And then, Charlie, if you could go to about line 277. Okay, that's great. And in this section that deals with paid parental leave, we had proposed some changes. And what we would like to do is withdraw those proposed changes if you would accept status quo, which is, as I understand it, you were amenable to status quo on this.
That'd be great.
So that is done also. So we're on a roll.
Thank you. Appreciate that very much.
Well, that's possible because you sent us the information that you did, and we really appreciate it. It gave us a chance to review everything and discuss it and talk about it. So really do appreciate it. Thank you very much for doing that.
Well, we appreciate this. I think this is a good way to begin the year. You know, we have a lot of expectations from 2022.
Okay, and then we're going to go to page 3, and I'm going to bounce around a lot on page 3. Charlie,
Chuck, can you before you go, Charlie, could you scroll back down to line 284, where there is some language there in red that has a new date? So you're still proposing
this? No, we're withdrawing that, John. John, we're withdrawing it.
Yeah,
status quo.
I wrote here, revert to status quo, so to remind myself to do that when we bring the proposal back.
Oh, okay. All right.
That when we said revert to status quo, that means everything, unless there were some sort of mutually accepted changes that have already been done. But this is reverting back to the language. Okay.
Thank you for the clarification.
What line, Chuck?
134, please. Okay, what we've suggested in a couple of places here is that we strike some old legacy language that talks about people who are being paid for unused sick leave upon disability. And this is something that is no longer used. These are people who have cease their employment. And you had indicated in what you'd sent us that you thought the UFF could agree, and we didn't know exactly what that meant.
Well, we needed a clarification.
But this is a provision that has been in there for years that really is no longer applicable. There are limits on how much sick leave can be paid out, and that's specified in here, and whether someone has been diagnosed with a disability or not is not going to affect what that sick leave payout is. And just because this has caused some confusion in the last couple of years, we'd just like to remove it to eliminate the confusion for everybody, because the caps on the sick leave payout are very, very clear. It's 25% of the unused sick leave to a maximum of 480 hours, period. That's what it is, whether somebody is disabled, even if, God forbid, they're deceased, their estate gets the unused sick leave or the appropriate portion of the unused sick leave. So what we would like to do is strike the language on lines 133 to 135 that we've suggested there. And also, Charlie, I hate to do this to you, on 121. It's basically the same point.
Okay. So let me then understand. So if somebody goes under disability, then there's already an arrangement to work out payment to the person.
If they leave the university because of disability, like anybody else who retires, resigns, or expires, there will be a sick leave payout of 25% of the unused sick leave balance to a maximum of 480 hours.
Okay.
But the fact that somebody may be choosing to retire because they've become disabled does not increase their sick leave payout. The sick leave payout is absolutely capped. And this language has caused us some confusion.
Mm-hmm. So Chuck, what is this language has caused confusion. Can you be specific on what the confusion is, whether if it's uncapped for if you leave because of a disability versus a cap if for any other reason? Is that the confusion?
The confusion was on the part of a retired employee who, after submitting retirement paperwork, said, oh, by the way, I think I'm disabled and I want to get all my sick leave. And
what John said is accurate. I think that's what he's saying. There's confusion that they thought they could get a payment exceeding 480 hours. I think you had it right, John.
Okay.
So what we're looking for.
So we'd like to strike the language on 121 and 133 through 135 that we had indicated previously. We would like to proceed with that. Yeah. We think that that's going to resolve some of the confusion, hopefully all the confusion associated with this legacy language. And then
we'll definitely take a look. I think, I see what you're saying. So let's take a look at that, make sure that it's not affecting anyone. So it's people, what you're saying is that some people are confusing it because they're retiring, but they still want to take advantage of the fact that they're retiring because they're disabled. And so they should fit under the disabled clause and continue to be on the. Okay. Are people doing it because of insurance, health insurance?
I don't know why someone was claiming this other than they wanted a larger payout. There was no discussion about insurance.
Uh-huh. I see.
Charlie, then I'm at line 136, please. Lines 136 through 139, we believe, are another example of language that has past its useful life. When somebody retires, for example, and gets this payout of their unused sick leave, they can't come back to work. So there's nobody that's going to come back within 100 days and repay their sick leave payout and have their sick leave restored. So, you know, this is just another sentence here that we think is no longer applicable and no longer useful. And we would suggest that those lines should be struck.
So this was, again, something that was a practice before?
Well, it used to be, Talat, if you or I decided to retire, we could come back the next day.
I see.
In a new role. Some limited time, significantly less than 100. But now it's either
7 to 12 months
or a year, depending upon various circumstances. So we just don't think this language is applicable, and it would potentially cause some confusion. So we'd like to get it out of there. Right below that section, we had proposed adding the clause there about subject to the limitations.
This is a good point here, Chuck, and it has been a confusion for me too. So there's a question in chat on it. So we see a number of people retire and come back. When they come back, are they coming as OPS or are they coming as with full benefits?
Depends on whether they applied for a position or not, too. Or if
there are some that have come back on regular faculty lines. For example, I can think of someone in my home college who went through drop, retired, stayed away for the required year, and then came back in a non-tenure earning faculty position.
And then they have all the benefits of a non-tenure earning faculty.
A surge position.
Mm-hmm. And let me clarify something. The legislature continues to move the line outward. So that's inartfully stated. But now you have to stay away from the university from between 7 and 12 months, depending on which, you know, whether you're in drop, they have all these different or not, or which retirement plan you're in. But they have now said this year or last year, I think they came out, Department of Management Services, and said, we cannot take somebody back even as a volunteer for 6 months after they retire. So if I retire in August, which I'm planning to do, and I said to Yandi 30 days out, you know, well, I know you're having a little bit of a hard time finding somebody to, you know, you haven't hired somebody to replace me yet. I'll come back and I'll just do bargaining, you know, for free, you know, just because I've been here a long time and I like you guys and I'll help you out. She wouldn't be able to let me do it. I could not do that even as a volunteer. So when this was in here, yeah, you could come back and, you know, you could restore your sick leave, but now you can't come back within 100 days. So that's just kind of like, well, you know, why would we leave it in the contract?
I see. So this one, so what we're talking about then is that this thing about the 100 days has already been taken care of.
In other words,
you cannot come back within 100 days. On the other hand, you can come back after what, 1 year or what we're talking about.
Yeah, you could. Now, I mean, yes.
Don't get the sick leave restored if you pay it back.
Yeah, I can't come back in,
Okay.
So I could come back in a year.
Let's say, Sherry, and we would love you to have you come back. You come back after 1 year. You're starting anew. Is that right?
Right. Okay. Yeah, because you've retired. You're gone. You know, and you're already starting to get retirement benefits after. You know, so I could come back in a year and teach a course, and you know, in legal studies or you know, business law or something if I chose to, or I could come back and do something in the general counsel's office if they'd have me, but. You know, but I got to stay out for that period of time. And when I come back, I'm coming back as an OPS. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I come back
as
an adjunct or something like that. Yeah. But, well, adjuncts are OPS, I guess. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could hire me back if they wanted me to.
Right. Okay. We'll take a look at this, Chuck.
Okay, thank you. Charlie, we've got line 141 showing. Talat, this is another clarification that we want to make, just to make it clear that this statement that's currently numbered 6, it's going to have maybe number 4 when we get done here. It's only applicable to eligible employees. It's not that the way it might read, it sounds like it doesn't matter what your status is, but it has to be for eligible employees. So just for clarification, we want to add that language subject to the limitations above. It's not changing anything, just simply clarifying for anyone that's reading it.
So this one, like you said, to eligible employees. And what does eligible employee mean here?
It means that they've got more than 10 years and so on.
Yeah, it's that not exceeding 480 hours. It doesn't say eligible employee, but okay. We could probably add eligible here, but presumably if there are deaths subject to the limitations, that's what makes it work for the not exceeding 480 hours.
I see.
And you know, Talat, we're off to a pretty good start here. This is yeah. Great. And you know, what we hope that we can do is continue to talk about some of these things. And we think we're moving forward. There may be some things that we'd really like to have, and we want to make sure that you're aware of those. And we hope that we can be flexible and work with each other on these things and try to make them happen. One thing that I'd like to point out to you is lines 103 to 109. And this is something that has become very obvious as a need to us over the last couple of years, where faculty members were legitimately out on medical leave. That's great, but their physicians had indicated that there was a date that they were expected to return. And what happens is their home units begin to plan accordingly, and they're counting on them being there. And what we would like to do is make sure that there's a follow-up medical certification that comes in 7 days before the person's supposed to return. We have to make assignments 6 weeks out. We're counting on this person coming back. If there is an issue, and sometimes this happens, somebody hasn't quite recovered the way they were expected to, or they're making good progress, but maybe they can't work 40 hours a week, but whatever the case may be, we simply want to know about it at least 7 days in advance so that we can pivot however we may need to pivot. But what we've had is employees who reach the end of their medical leave, the university's in contact with them saying, we need to know what's going on. We need to know what's going on. And we have silence. Or, I'll get that to you later, whatever they may say. But we really need to know what's going on. We want them to return. We just want to make sure that we're all on the same page and we're expecting them to return at the same time. So this is something we'd really like to have.
I understand what you're saying, Chuck, but what the way it reads to me is that, and I think Sherry mentioned that also, that it seems like you cannot come back if you recover early. You cannot just come back. Is that right?
If somebody came with medical certification that said they were ready to come back, I don't see why they wouldn't be allowed to come back. Sherry, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, no, we can. And I can tell you, I can give you a personal example. When I was out for 2 years ago for serious hospitalization operation, and I was supposed to be out for a month. And, HR requires you to, anytime that you're out sick for any length of time, not a couple of days, you have to have medical certification to come back. So my medical certification originally said that I needed to be back by 30, at the end of 30 days. at the end of 3 weeks, I was, or 2.5 weeks, I was going stir crazy. So I said, I want to come back my third week instead of staying out until, you know, another the whole four weeks. And HR and Scott, I think it was still GC at the time, said, great, but I can't let you come back early unless your doctor certifies that it's okay. Because he originally said you needed to stay out for a month. So I just called my doctor and I said, look, you know, I'm feeling great. I need to get back to work. I'm going crazy. She said, fine. And so they just, you know, the HR sent me the forms and she signed them off and I came back and I was back a full week earlier. That's not a problem, but it is a problem. If I had waited until I'd taken my whole 4 weeks and then didn't show up, which we've had happen, and they're sitting here wondering, well, where is Sherry? You know, we've got things, we've been holding stuff for her for a month.
I got it.
That's the whole point. It's just that we actually
have don't want to be surprised that day.
Yes.
When the person is supposed to come back, you don't want to be surprised that they can't come back. You want to know a week in advance whether they can or not.
Yeah. And you can certainly always come back early. But if you've been, you know, you just have to get your doctor to say, yeah, she's clear, take her back.
Yeah. Assuming someone who's out has enough accumulated sick leave when their leave starts, they're being paid the whole time that they're out. That's going to be a common thing that's going to happen. So this isn't affecting what somebody's going to be paid.
Right, right.
Yeah. And as Sherry said, yes, we'd be happy to take them back if they're ready to work and want to work. Hallelujah. We'll welcome them back. And I don't know exactly what their assignment might be, if it's in the middle of a semester or whatever, but they certainly could come back and work. The problem is at the other end, when we're counting on them to be back, and that the most recent information we have from their medical professional is that they're going to be back, and then they don't show up. And worse yet, they won't help us get that information. Even if it's got to be extended, that's okay. But we need to know about it. We need the medical certification to know that the leave has to be extended.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I understand.
Okay. Thank you. And we hope that we can come to agreement on that, because I think that really affects all of us when somebody can't come back and other people have to be assigned courses to cover at the last minute. It really affects a lot of people. So we just simply want to know in advance what's going on with somebody. So hopefully we can agree on that.
Chuck, can I ask a clarifying question? So
certainly.
The return to work certification. Charlie, can you scroll up just a little bit, please, to the next section heading?
Which direction? Down?
Up. Low. Sorry. The
other way.
to the beginning of the document.
Okay. To line one?
No, to the section just before that. So for instance, that the return to work certification is for all types of leaves, all types of medical leaves. So it would be like an unpaid leave or for instance, like the paid parental leave, for example. So you want that language to apply to all types of sort of, like, also in the recovery leave section. Is that it's just for the use of sick leave, right?
It's under sick leave. Let's see. It's under certification.
Yeah, it's just sick leave.
Just for a sick leave. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. I couldn't place it in the document.
Sure. Did you see it? Did I get to the right spot?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's under sick leave.
Yeah.
And it's under sick leave and under the condition that you have to have a certification before coming back.
Yeah. If you go out on sick leave for any length of time, this is just HR. I mean, this isn't unique to the faculty or to this contract. You know, HR requires you to get a certification that it's okay for you to come back, because we don't know.
So this thing is, we are going through it right now, right? Because you have COVID, may have an extended period of sickness, which some people have had. And so what you're saying here is that I mean, a simpler way is that you have to basically keep the unit you're in informed about when you're going to come back.
Right.
And not waiver, you know, I mean, you have 7 days, right? Because so 7 days before you come back, you have to basically say that you're ready to come back.
If we said 30 days, it may be too soon for a doctor to tell if somebody's going to. So we need a little bit of time is what we're suggesting. But I hopefully we've clarified that a little bit today about what's important. And then, Charlie, next thing is lines 111 to 117. This is something that I know we've suggested is a substantial change that we had proposed on the payout, the sick leave payout, we had proposed that employees that would be hired after we ratify this agreement, that they wouldn't be subject to receive a sick leave payout. This is something that, you know, might be something where we could be more flexible on if we could get some of these other things that are important to us, like the medical certification that is important. The we talked about the couple of clauses that mentioned disability and how that would affect the sick leave payout. It doesn't really affect the sick leave payout. We just like to get that confusing language out of there. And then I think we would be open to, you know, talking again about this sick leave payout. And then the last thing that I'd like to bring up, Charlie, if you could get line 452, and if it's possible to extend it all the way to 473.
Oh, yeah.
You did great. Thank you. What we have done, when we went through the last full book, we agreed on this idea of recovery leave. And it's been helpful. We've had a few employees that have taken advantage of it. It's working well, we think. And we think it struck a much more positive tone compared to the compulsory leave that we used to have. One of the things that we agreed on, and you can see it on line 473, is we talked about there being a fitness for duty exam was part of this process. So it's a term that we had agreed to previously as something that we would use. The way we had structured this particular section, when it just talks about recovery leave, a number of the points early in this section really aren't talking about recovery leave. They're talking about what leads up to recovery leave. And what frequently is very important as we're leading into recovery leave is that there is this fitness for duty assessment. So what we would like to do is make this change that we've suggested. We're not changing anything about what is written in the article, about what it means. It just is clearer that we're making an assessment that may lead to recovery leave rather than just saying this is recovery leave. One doesn't start recovery leave when they're getting an assessment of their condition. It's after we have that information, there's a determination whether somebody might benefit from recovery leave. So we think this is a fairly simple change that will help people understand what this process is a little bit better. So, you know.
Chuck, you know, again, I'm no specialist here, but several of my colleagues are. So I think, Monique, are you around? If Monique could address this issue.
I don't know if you can hear me. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Monique.
But go ahead. Okay. Just the fitness for duty assessment or fitness for duty.
Monique, we can't hear you that very well. Can you speak?
Okay, can you hear me now?
Better, yeah.
Okay, the term fitness for duty evaluation is very specific. So it's something that was really coined with Social Security disability evaluations, and it involves specific types of tests. There are practitioners who are experts in the area that have to provide a fitness for duty evaluation. So it may be hard for someone to make an appointment within the time frame to get it done.
We couldn't catch everything.
Maybe I had a hard time understanding that.
If you don't mind putting it in chat, that would be great.
Okay, we'll do.
And Giovanna, did you want to say something? Because you were writing something in chat.
I believe what Monique was saying was that fitness for duty is a specific term in a particular process that only certain physicians are eligible to perform. And so it would put an undue burden on the employee to, it might just not be practical to be able to get this particular kind of evaluation because it's a very specific thing. It's not a general term, but it's one that's names a particular process of evaluation that requires certain certification to be eligible to perform it. I believe that is what she was saying, but she should probably correct me.
She did put it in chat. Fitness for duty assessment is a mental health evaluation in which a psychologist performs tests and provides feedback about an employee's mental fitness to perform a specific job. These evaluations are usually done when a circumstance occurs that may impair an employee from successfully doing their job.
Well, so that sounds like workman's comp or something, but we're not. I guess that I can see where if management would be in the way, it says too much power to the employer, but we're not the ones making the decision on fitness for duty. The employer is not making that decision.
No, but you're requiring that this process be engaged in before returning to work. And if it's a very specifically named process, that is limiting what's possible for employees to do. I think that's the point.
Oh, the person who pays for the evaluation is the employer. But it is, we find them through, we secure them through EAP. It says right here where we have to provide it, where it comes from, and paid for by the university. Okay.
Well, if I may, I'd like you to say one more thing about this. I understand that, there are people that refer to fitness for duty evaluations. That's already in our language. Now, at some point we're trying to get to some agreement on a full book so that we can get our faculty paid. That's what we're trying to do. The fitness for duty examination is already part of the language, and we haven't talked about that. What we're just talking about here is whether taking language that we had already agreed to in the last full book and using it to simply clarify a section heading that doesn't only talk about recovery leave. I mean, if fitness for duty is something that we want to explore more deeply, perhaps that's something we can do on a reopener, perhaps just. But in the interest of getting salary increases for our faculty, we're not changing any of the meat of this article. We're simply talking about a section heading that would be made more clear for everybody.
Well, the only problem that we have here, Chuck, is that this is apparently a loaded term, which I didn't know, but my psychologist friends tell me that this is a, you know, this is something.
Okay, well, and that's why I'm saying, Talat, if that's something that we need to go in great depth and explore both of our sides, it, I believe, is harmful to your members to do that now.
So what we are saying here is that maybe we could, why don't we, you know, move on and we'll take a look at this, because the one thing would be, you know, again, it's one of those things where the content is not changing.
Let's move on.
On the other hand, if you put it there, it could be given a different interpretation. And next time around, we have to change all the content. So I think we have to be a little clear here about exactly what we want to achieve.
All right, let's just move on.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, that's it on 17.
Great. So I think, and you guys, you have to leave at 2:50, right? So, okay. Yeah. So I think those were the main things that you guys had. And we have a few things that I need to go over, not all of it. So the first one was Article 3. And I do want to go over that. So let me, if I can share my screen, then, and again, it's not a difficult one. And I hope we can agree on that. So let's see. So basically, and I'll make it bigger for Charlie. Can you see it, Charlie?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you know, this is with the all comments here, right? So essentially, we're really talking about just this thing here. And so before I even go into the words there, all we were asking, and I, if Robert wants to speak, that would be fine. All we are asking is we continue in the mode that we are working right now. In other words, we totally understand that it can't be misused. We can't do, we're not going to be, you know, nobody should do anything crazy. And I won't give examples of what was done, but we all totally understand that. So that's all we're asking. The language that you have suggested actually makes it difficult, because what it says is that we cannot do what we're doing right now. And all we were asking is just to continue to do what we're doing right now. I mean, Robert has been able to inform the bargaining. I mean, I think we have worked in a really in a very pleasant way, I think, this whole year. You know, Robert goes and he informs people, and it's just information that is being given, but it doesn't have anything to do with elections. It's just
Talat, can I explain? Because I think, if you don't mind.
Yes, go ahead.
I think what we have here is just a miscommunication. And I think that, the BOT just doesn't understand what we're asking. And the language that you introduced to us completely ignores the request that we were making in the original proposal. And so, again, I don't think that you were doing it on purpose. I think you just misunderstand what it is we're interested in. And, you know, maybe what is being done de facto now is status quo. And Charlie can confirm this. But what we need is the ability to use a mass email system, because, you know, I'd mentioned earlier when we first introduced Article 3 that we have sort of moved beyond bulletin boards. And I guess the bulletin boards is the blue book language, if I'm using that term correctly here, right? And the one thing that we need out of this, which is what you all took out, was the ability to use the mass email system. And so what that means is we need to be able to make a request of UCF when we switch mass email systems. So like right now, or at least let me kind of explain, when I became president, I launched a new mass email system, right? A new service, right? So it hadn't been used before with us and it wasn't going through. And so what had happened is the IT people on the systems end said, you have to get with the server you're trying to contact and get them to put this information in the server, and that will let your email go through. And I had made the request of Charlie back in September of 2020, Charlie complied, she sent the request in, IT did it in a day, and boom, we were able to use mass email. My concern is what happens when I'm not around, when Charlie's not around, and you know, people don't understand that we need this sort of process to communicate. And I was thinking that it'd be a good idea to put it into the contract to say that if we need to make a request of UCF IT in order to facilitate an email system, a mass email system, that we should we should be able to do so. We should, you know, you all should assist us in helping us out, because it's on your server end, not on our end. We can't do anything to make the mass email system work. If it's not working, you all have to do that. And so that's why I think that part is really necessary. And that's what you stripped completely out of the language that we had had in there. And of course, you know, to sort of, again, Talati kind of mentioned this in passing earlier, but, you know, we understand that, you know, years passed that there was some bad faith in these regards. And so that's why I included the language of, you know, mass email content will conform to PERC and Department of Labor standards, which make it clear what you can and cannot do in any messaging. So, I mean, I think what we had fits the bill, and I think there's nothing sort of objectionable here. And your language completely missed what we were asking for wholly. So we cannot accept your language at all. And if you're, you know, if you're adamant that you won't take our language, then we're going to have to status quo this.
Okay. Thank you, Robert. That was very helpful for me, because I didn't understand what you were talking about. Now, Charlie may have a better understanding than I did, because she worked with you on this before. But thank you. That clarified some things for me anyway.
Well, take a look at it. I cannot promise to fix all problems. That's part of the problems with the language that you provided, is that there's no way that I can promise to fix everything. But I'm grateful that you think that I'm so powerful. So shall we move on to the next, please? Because we have such limited time. I want to make sure we get through everything.
Yeah, no, then we'll stop. But also we did want to, to tell you that we do appreciate what you did and how IT facilitated it, because that made it very much easier for us this time. Yeah, but
that was one specific problem. There's lots that could happen. So.
Right. So let me, so there is one, oh yeah. So there's one, the last one that let me, so I'm actually going to just present two more articles.
Good.
Yeah, three more, and they'll be quick. So the next one is, is 22. And again, we have one point of a disagreement. I think you all know that. And I think I'm just going to go through it here. So this is the version of 22 that we got from you. And essentially, we're going through, everything is fine. And we have basically, sorry. Let me go into here to review and go to, I got all markup. So as you can see, even with all markup, there's no markup. So we're all fine. We come up here. Yeah, so that's the only place. And that's the only one. So again, it's the same thing. We appreciate, Chuck, you looking for a way in which, people who are not on sabbatical but on professional development leave, they could still do it. But we really think that this is such a, you know, number of people taking it, it's only a few. And so we would like to stay with the status quo, which is that individuals who would like two semesters, and the committee believes that they have a reasonable proposal or a good proposal to do so, should be allowed to do so. So that's all. Okay, and that's the only thing that we differ on. I think there were several places where you wanted response, and we have responded. I'll send you this one. Okay. We basically agree. There's only one place here where we have clarified, and I think we actually liked the language that you had. We have just changed some words around just for clarification. I think that it hasn't changed the sense at all. Okay. So I'll send you this one. And
before you do it, Talat, will you please change the header to say that it's a UFF proposal? So I don't.
The header also. Thank you.
You're the best.
I will do that. That is a problem that I've had before. So I'll do that one. Let me go through one more, which is 14, but I think you know 14. I've sent you 14 already.
Yeah.
Okay, so 14th is that if we go status quo on that one item, I think we're fine. So maybe I won't show you that one. 31, that's the other one where, again, which one is, yeah. So this is again from November 10th. And maybe again, we go to the same thing here. Let me share screen.
If there's no changes, you don't have to worry about it till that.
Okay, so our, can you see my screen, by the way?
Yeah, no, not yet, but if there's no changes from your last proposal, you don't have to put it up.
Okay, so last proposal, well, I think we had it was a confusing one because you had sent me something to TA. So basically what we are saying right now is that the one in which we basically delete 31.2 would be the way to go.
Right, yeah. Right. I'm sending you a TA in hopes that you were going to back off the strike, but that's fine.
We'll provide an alternative to you next session.
Okay. All right. So then I think if we are done with that, then that leaves me 14. I don't think I need to show you anything there. And basically what we are asking for 8, 12, 13, and 16 is the status quo.
Okay, 12, all right. Does our team want to, Chuck, do you want to go through any of these with them before we, because we've still got a few minutes. Yeah, we've got a few minutes.
Yeah.
You guys must have an important meeting. I think I can guess.
Well, different important meetings, but
I see. Okay.
Did you want to go over any of them? Is he there? Oh, you're on mute, Chuck, honey. I can't.
When I'm on mute, nobody objects to anything I say. It's kind of convenient.
All right.
But let's try to go through 8 and 12 and 13, hopefully. And I'd like to start in backwards order on 8 at line 175. Okay, you know, Talat, we hear you. We understand that you're interested in status quo. There are a couple of things in here, and in particular, this is one that we have tried to include because we think it's an absolute benefit to the in-unit faculty, that if there are some courses that have been proposed for study abroad and enrollment is very low. There hasn't been much that's attractive in terms of potential pay for faculty. And what we've tried to do here is incorporate a per diem for faculty that would be teaching low enrollment courses that's twice what it is for somebody who is simply accompanying students to a study abroad location. They get a $100 stipend already. That's already in the agreement. And what we'd like to do is for people who may actually be teaching one of these low enrollment classes, they'd really like to go if it's possible. The university, when funds are available, could offer them a per diem of $200 a day. So we see this as a win for the faculty only. What's in it for the university is we want these courses to go. We want the study abroad programs to be successful. And we think this may be one way to help in that regard. So
I think here the point is the following, Chuck. I think I see what you're saying. So the sense that where you're coming from is that the enrollment is so low that the university would cancel this class.
Potentially.
You would cancel it. And so let's say that there are 5 students enrolled. I don't know, what is the minimum number for these?
It's set for each course.
So let's say, for example, there are 2 students who want to go. I mean, there has to be some minimum number, right? I mean, you would not even pay the $200 per day unless there's a certain number, isn't that?
Well, it says the university may provide a supplemental summer appointment that consists of a per diem. Right now, that's not even an option. We would like to implement that option to potentially see more of these study abroad courses be offered.
Well,
instead of being canceled.
Chuck, the current language says that the university may provide a summer supplemental summer appointment, which the terms of a supplemental summer appointment is defined in another article. So what you're suggesting in this situation is limiting that supplemental summer appointment to that specific dollar amount, which is different from the existing supplemental summer appointment.
That's a problem with FTE, John, because if you can only afford to pay X amount, you have to adjust the FTE. So if you have two employees that are making different salaries, you have to adjust the FTE differently. And so it's not workable.
We will talk about that. I think I know where you're coming from. You're basically saying that instead of canceling a course,
or asking the faculty to volunteer and only paying their travel, they would also get a stipend.
And but if the course had met the minimum requirement, then they would have gotten 1 month's salary.
If that's what had been agreed to, there are separate agreements on each of these courses.
And so right now you're saying that they're given $100 a day or?
No, right now, if it's the enrollment's too low, they're told, okay, we'll pay your travel if you want to volunteer to teach it.
I see.
And we're not saying that in every case will a unit be able to offer.
Yeah.
But we'd like to allow for that possibility.
Yeah. Yeah. So we see this as
a benefit to the faculty.
Yes.
And the students.
So is this the only change in this one?
No, I'm just starting from the back.
Sure. We'll talk it over.
Okay, all right, thank you. And Charlie, the next thing is about line 138. What we had proposed here, there was a very complicated process for determining how faculty who teach overloads in premium tuition programs, how it was determined what they're paid. It's very, very complicated. What we would like to do is take that constraint away so that faculty are not limited by this language in terms of what they could be paid for teaching in these premium courses. That's what we're trying to accomplish here, which again, we see as a way to make this more attractive for faculty who may have opportunities to teach in premium tuition programs to participate in those programs. We'd like to see them participate. So to me, I think this is a win for the faculty.
Can you define premium teaching tuition program?
There are some special programs. Engineering has one.
Like in master's. Engineering
management. There's an executive MBA program, things like that, they're not charged the usual tuition rates.
Okay. Professional masters and things like that.
Not all, but some professional masters still have the regular tuition rate, but there are some special programs, particularly ones that are run through organizations like Continuing Ed, that may have premium tuition.
They're not a lot of them, because we have to get them approved by the BOC. So there are very few of them actually. But
next line, Chuck, or
131 we wanted to look at. We're just trying to clarify that these overload appointments apply to instructional duties, and this determination of what somebody might be paid would apply to the overload instructional duties that they have. So again, what we got in line 131, 132 is meant to be a clarification more than anything else, but the compensation associated with these premium tuition programs, we think is really a benefit for the faculty. Then Charlie, in line 108.
Before you go on to check, Claudia, did you want to ask your question?
I didn't have a question. I was simply suggesting that right now, the agreed upon overload appointment in premium tuition programs is 11.5% of the salary for the faculty. And by taking this out, they're going to say that it's going to be adjunct rate. How is that a benefit?
It says it shall be no less than the adjunct rate.
Correct. And that means it can be the adjunct rate, which presumably is significantly less than 11.5% of faculty salary. So I don't see how this is a benefit to the faculty.
We know that there are some colleges that would like to be able to offer faculty more to participate in these premium programs. All this adjunct rate sets is a floor. It's not meant to be exactly what it is. It just says it's got to be at least that. But in many cases, we think that faculty will do better.
They can't.
And that's what we're trying to
pay more than that. That's the problem, is that they can't pay more than that. And then the programs that we're talking about.
So you're saying the problem is that they cannot pay more than 11.5%? That they're trying to pay more than 11.5% for an overload course?
Keep in mind that this is not in the College of Arts and Humanities. This is in.
Right, but so are you saying that the problem is that they're not able to pay more than 11.5%?
Then we can rectify it very easily by just saying that they shall be at least.
Less than 11.5%. That's fine. If they want to pay more than that,
it's 11.5% of the mean academic year salary of this group of employees. So it's very specific and it changes.
Charlie, what we're saying is, if on line 139, you just add the word "shall be at least" between B and 11, just say at least, then that. It takes care of the problem. Yeah, just add at least over there, and then you don't have a problem. You're not limited to 11.5%.
Okay, I'll make a note.
Yeah, we will consider that. Thank you for that suggestion.
Take it back. Next.
Line 108. This is an addition that we wanted to make simply for clarification that there may be limited classroom availability. Sometimes in the summer, there are changes that are made to classrooms. New technology is implemented. And I know a few years ago in the College of Engineering and Computer Science, a number of our classrooms went down for half the summer, either the A term or the B term. And we had to balance how classes were going to be taught throughout the summer. So there's a possibility that there's sometimes a classroom availability issue that affects how much can be offered in the summer. That's all we're saying. It's
that's
not
no
only...
problem, Chuck. I think what I'll do is I'll send you our annotated changes that are certainly acceptable, and the ones that if we got the sense of what you were saying, we could make a change. So I'll send you
how helpful that is. That's super, super helpful.
Thank you, Talat.
I'll do that.
And then 101, just for clarity, again, we'd like to say that 12 months is really 365 days. It isn't necessarily from the first day of a month through the last day of the month that occurs 11 months later. It's 365 days.
Month is defined in the definition section as calendar months. So
yeah, not very well. Yeah, it's not very
right,
well.
But you, so the I understand the point you're trying to make. However, that conflicts with the what you put here conflicts with the definition section.
And that's why the definitions are in your pile to review and see if you can offer suggestions. This may be superfluous, but for right now, since we don't know your response, we're offering that as an option.
Yeah. I mean, as long as you include leap year, I'm fine. I mean, I'm
then Charlie, line 88. This is another clarification that we wanted, that the non-tenure earning multi-year renewable appointments are not given to ENG funded faculty, that those are going to be on a recurring basis, that those faculty would get an annual agreement each and every year. The one exception is the National Academy members.
There's only one left that's in that group, so.
So they're usually, let's see, ENG funded, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't have a multi-year on anything but ENG. Anything else, Chuck?
Yes, please, line 46. This is something that we're, again, we're just trying to clarify. We really have very few of any employees that are on a calendar year appointment. They're on a 12-month appointment, and we wanted to clarify that in a couple of places, both on line 46 and on line 48. And we also wanted to make clear that as these suggested changes have been written here, we are maintaining the employee's right to request a change in the length of their appointment. So we consider it that it's a management right to make the assignment, and management should have some say in whether someone's on a 9-month or 12-month contract, but we also want the employees to have the ability to request a change in their appointment. Somebody who's on a 12-month appointment that would prefer a 9, we're happy to entertain that request. And similarly, somebody who may request a 12 instead of a 9, we'd be happy to consider that request. So we don't see anything that's being taken away from the rights of the employees here.
So this one does imply that if they are on 12 months right now and would like it to be 9 months, it can be done.
They can request it. They can
just
request
like,
it.
Just like
right now, I know someone who requested and it couldn't be done.
Yeah, that happens. That's why it's request. It's, and the language said in previously request.
Okay.
There's no change. There's no change to that.
Okay. So we would appreciate it if you would look at Article 8. You know, some of these things we think are beneficial for the faculty. Some of these things are really clarifications that we don't think are really substantive changes to the article.
So there's a question in chat that says, what does it mean to consider a request?
Just like it did before.
Yeah, that's status quo language.
That's status quo language. It's just been moved down.
Okay.
And that's it, right, Chuck?
That's it on 8. If you could pull up 12, Charlie.
All right, just give me just a minute here.
And I'm going to be looking at lines 31 to 33, Charlie, when you get there.
Yeah, sorry.
We appreciated, you know, you letting us know that you're in favor of status quo on this. There's one thing that we want to suggest to you, which
is 12, Chuck?
12, please. Yes.
What line, please?
31.
Yeah, so we both, 12 and 13, we said status quo, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a couple things we just want to show you that okay. We think are worth taking a look at.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I was sharing, and I'm looking at it, and I wasn't sure. Sorry. Okay, there we go.
Thank you, Charlie. So on lines 31 and 32, essentially, what we would like to do is just update the years so that in the next full book, the example that we show is applicable to the time frame covered by that CBA. That's it.
Yeah, I think I'll do the same thing again, Chuck. I'll annotate it and send it back to you.
Talat, that's the only change that we're proposing right now in Article 12.
Okay.
That is the one change that we are suggesting to your status quo proposal.
Sure. It's just the academic year dates.
Yeah, that's great.
Correct. That's it. And then, Charlie, if we could go to Article 13. Okay, Charlie, lines 110 to the end. On the limitation section, we just want to say that this particular article doesn't apply to employees on auxiliary or CNG funding, anyone's got visiting or provisional status, or on a multi-year agreement. So it applies to everybody who's not listed in that list of limitations. And as a consequence, on lines 86 to 93, because we address the multi-year appointments there in the limitations, there's some language in 86 through 93 that we think can be stricken that deals with the multi-year appointments.
Okay. Yeah, I think I got the sense of it. Again, you're making it consistent.
But then that's the only two things that are still in our proposal.
Okay. So, Charlie,
so what you're saying is you're willing to revert on everything else. I mean, obviously, you can look at things like this and see this is just a tidiness, but just please look.
Would you send me a clean version, or no, do you want me to work?
I will.
Okay, if you send me a clean one, that would be good.
I will send you what we have, and we're looking to see if we can come to agreement on at least these parts.
Okay.
Okay.
That's good. Yeah, great. I think you've got 5 minutes. No, three. I think we're done, right?
I think we're done.
Yeah.
And I think
that was pretty good.
I think we've got at least a couple that we may be able to get off.
Right.
So that's always good.
I think so, Charlie, if you don't mind, send me the,
I've already stored it. I'm already getting ready. So
okay. Send me that. I'd annotate it and send it back to you. And I'll do it I'll do it within the week.
And it'll get out of your drafts folder.
I know that on the 17th, I think I just froze. You know, I had to be, I was the grand marshal. So my day ended on the 17th at 9 p.m. And I had the whole thing sitting there the entire time. And since I have a 3-year-old granddaughter, that took care of everything from.
That will do lovely. It. Yes.
That sounds absolutely lovely.
Yeah. So that was it. Yeah. And so, well, that's good. And so we will see you guys in 2 weeks. And thanks to everyone for their input. And I think let me just ask a quick question, because you guys need to leave, but maybe this is a good opportunity for us to have a caucus since the colleagues are still here. So why don't you guys, if you guys leave, and then we can just stay here. Okay. If Briannis could make one of us a host.
Yeah, Briannis is out, but we'll stop the recording now, and then we will get out of here.
See you later. Folks, if you don't mind hanging around.